not just what's the opportunity cost if I do this, but also what's the opportunity cost if I don't do this.
Hi, I'm Carl Vaders, and welcome to The Church Lobby, Conversations on Faith and Ministry. Where would you love to travel to if money wasn't an obstacle? That's the question Tim Walker asks in this very practical episode. Today's conversation is about three subjects that can be of help to so many pastors, especially pastors in smaller churches. First of all, we'll talk about the importance of the growing side hustle culture that's bringing much-needed financial freedom for so many pastors. Then we'll talk about why creating financial, emotional, and family margin is so important for your life and ministry. And then finally, we'll talk about how to get the most out of your finances for travel through some practical steps that Tim has a mastery of. Tim pastors Restored Church in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and he was in the church lobby for episode 86 when we talked about the challenges of church ministry in a dying city center. Since then, he's helped a lot of pastors with very limited finances find the freedom to enjoy the enriching opportunity of travel. Lean in. There's a lot to gain from this episode. And don't forget to stick around when the interview is done. I'll come back with my take on why travel matters, especially in ministry. Well, Tim Walker, welcome back to the Church Lobby.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Carl. Looking forward to today's conversation.
Yeah, you and I talked, it's been a year and a half, 2 years ago, probably. It's episode 86, if anybody wants to find it. You pastor Restored Church in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Remind us again of where Wilkes-Barre is and what kind of ministry you're doing in the downtown of let's just call it a challenging area. Walk us through that for a moment or two.
Yeah, absolutely. So Wilkes-Barre, if you're a fan of The Office, is located just south of Scranton, Pennsylvania. The Scranton-Wilkes-Barre area is the third largest metropolitan area in the state of Pennsylvania. So I have been here for 14 years now, intentionally planted a church of and for the poor, located in the poorest neighborhood in the city, living in the poorest neighborhood in the city, have seen God work in so many different ways. Our church is primarily filled with first-generation Christians that Jesus has rescued out of addiction, prostitution, gangs, prison, homelessness, atheism, Satanism, and everything else in between. So we really just have a collective passion to reach those who are where we were, and so grateful for the opportunity that God has given us in this urban ministry context.
Yeah. And you and I met when I came to do a small church pastors conference there at your church in Wilkes-Barre. So I can testify that everything he's saying, there are no exaggerations in what he just said. It is an old historic church. Tell us a little bit about the history of the building as well, for those who haven't heard yet that story.
Yeah. So the building that we have, we've been here for 10 of our 14 years. It is a former Welsh Presbyterian church. So the Welsh revival that spread all over the world actually has some roots right here in Wilkes-Barre in modern American and even global church history. So this building was built during the Civil War, 1863, while the Civil War was being fought, this church building was being constructed. We've been here for about a decade now. When we moved in, we loved that it put us right in the poorest neighborhood in the city, thousands of people who are at risk and in need within walking distance of our building. And during our journey here, what we've really done is we have renovated the building with the purpose to really function like a community center Monday through Saturday that just so happens to house our church on Sundays. I've seen so many gospel opportunities in light of that.
Yeah. So those of you, the reason I wanted Tim to take a moment to talk about that again, we did this in episode 86, but I wanted you to hear about this so that those of you, and there are many of my listeners who are in very similar situations to where Tim is, you're pastoring a church in a town that used to be a strong lighthouse for the gospel, and it is no longer. You live in what used to be called the burnt out area or burnt over areas. There was so many revivals that happened 150 or so years ago that it was like they would tell other evangelists, no, that's burnt out. Don't even go over there. Like almost everybody saved over there, kind of a thing. And the heritage of that building is spectacular. But yeah, it's not that anymore. It is very post-Christian. It's very depressed economically, socially, and spiritually. So for those of you who are in those kinds of situations, you're wondering, what do I do with a heritage building in a very difficult place that is post-Christian and that is challenging? Go back to episode 86, listen to that with Tim. He's doing so many great things there. So I want to point you back to that. But for the rest of our time today, I want to talk about something that you have picked up and that you're doing. And it's going to take a little bit of explanation, because if you've listened this far, and if you've already read the title of the podcast, obviously, and you're listening this far, you've got enough trust in me and or Tim to know, okay, it probably isn't what it sounds like. But when we talk about travel hacking, travel multiplier, we're going to give you all kinds of great things for your miles. Are you trying to sell me something, or is this multi-level marketing? It sounds odd. And I think it only sounds odd because we have been so scammed by so many scam artists with ways to make money off the side, that there's this whole kind of, we go into it with more than a little bit of cynicism, even more than skepticism, but cynicism. So what I want to talk about with you today, Tim, is actually two parts. One, I want to talk about the importance of the side hustle, of earning extra money for the pastor, why that's growing, the philosophy behind it for you, and then get into how we can actually travel more as pastors' families and as those of us who don't have budgets to be able to travel on. You've unlocked some real secrets. It is not a scam. It is not something you have to sign up for. It's not multi-level marketing. It's an intelligent approach to travel that I want to learn more about, because I travel a lot and I'm not doing nearly enough to take advantage of the things that you've figured out. So this is as much for me as for everybody else. So with all of that precursor, so here you are, you're pastoring. It's in a challenging place. You got all kinds of mission. You can be more than busy enough just simply at Restored Church and with the work that's there. Why are you spending time on travel multiplier, on what you call travel hacking? Before we even get to what it is, why are you doing the side hustle?
So I would say probably a few years ago, you know, I'd been here about a decade, ministering in a depressed, impoverished urban context. And to be clear, technically I'm full-time in my role, but what that generally meant was the church barely pays me enough money to live on. And so it was a little bit of a stressor, somewhat of a challenge to be able to absorb and weather incidental expenses that went beyond the typical everyday month-to-month type expenses. So as I started looking at that, and I really started assessing health and longevity for ministry here in Wilkes-Barre, I started looking at part of that health equation is financial health and stability, some of the security and the necessity to be able to weather incidental financial needs. And so it was something where I started to reverse the equation, where I've got a lot of friends in ministry who I deeply respect that are bivocational and aspiring to leave behind the bivocational life to eventually become full-time. And when they become full-time, they'll leave behind the bivocational side. For me, I actually wanted to reverse the equation. I am full-time. Yet what I wanted to do was to try to figure out, what does it look like for me to engage some type of bivocational or co-vocational endeavor that doesn't force me to trade time for money? What I didn't want to do is I didn't want to constrain myself to a strict schedule where, hey, now the freedom that I used to have in ministry, now I've given up that freedom in pursuit of more financial margin. So I started looking at what would that look like? And a lot of it, I would say, has really intrigued me in what's called the knowledge economy. About 20 years ago, there was a guy named Tim Ferriss that wrote a popular book called The 4-Hour Workweek. Yeah. And it was kind of started this trajectory of, what does it look like to take knowledge and skills that you have, turn that into evergreen content that you're able to package and sell in a way that it is as available as people are interested. Kind of coined this whole idea of make money while you sleep. So I dove deep into that, started looking at what would that look like? How could I do that? What would I do? And then started looking at, okay, really, the best knowledge comes from lived experience. It comes from personal transformation and be able to speak back into the realities of those who are where you were, helping them to be able to learn and benefit from your journey and be able to do that. And so travel was a big pain point for us for many years in ministry, barely making enough money to live on. We didn't really make enough money to travel. Kind of felt like every year we had to beg and borrow just to be able to get a vacation.
Yeah.
Living in a context where the average family in our church gives $20 or less per week. That's the economic climate in which we minister. And so kind of saw the ceiling of that. And so on the travel side, I started just personally engaging travel hacking. We're able to take some incredible vacations through that. And then as I started walking this bivocational route, started looking at how could I help more people who are where I was, and what could that look like for me to actually turn it into a business? So that's where a few years ago, then I launched Travel Multiplier as my side business to be able to help people unlock the secrets of free travel, just like we did. And they have often found that it changed everything for them, just like it changed everything for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we get to the specifics of the travel hacking, because that will be the bulk of our conversation today, let's take a little further moment on the side hustle idea. And for those of you even who are unfamiliar with the term side hustle, what does that mean? It means you're hustling a little bit on the side. It means you've got a little bit of work on the side. It's not your primary job typically. There are co-vocational and bivocational pastors out there, obviously, who have a full-time secular job and who are pastoring in the margins between those, in the spaces between those. And you have both of our huge admiration and our prayers and anything I can do to help with that, as we've done with multiple podcasts and multiple articles so far. We want to continue to do that. But what we're talking about today, as Tim has talked about, is really the pastor who is close to full-time or full-time. But as you said, you have barely enough to live on, which is about the line that most pastors, especially in smaller congregations, which is most pastors, where we are. Some of us are on slightly on the downside of the not quite enough money to live on. Some are just a little bit above that, where we've got a little bit of comfort for the first time in our lives. But that knife's edge is very familiar to our listeners, of course. So talk about just a little bit more for those who might be in that situation and who are looking at it and going, I don't want to peel away any more time from the ministry that I'm doing. I can barely function pastoring this church as it is. I would love to have a little more margin in my finances, but is it really worth the time that it's going to cost me? Talk to that pastor who's got that really legitimate concern.
Yeah. So I think in a lot of ways, there is an opportunity cost that you have to assess in both the negative and the positive. So part of what I started to do was I started to have all those same feelings, like, I don't know, do I really want to do anything you invest in is time. And so, man, I feel like I've got these things I'm developing in ministry. I've got all of these needs I'm absorbing. Like, do I really want one more thing in my schedule? No, I don't want one more thing in my schedule. And I don't think any of us who are driven and visionary and faithful in leadership do. I don't think any of us would answer that question positively. But we would say, okay, but I do want more margin. I do need more security. My family does need some more peace of mind on the financial end. A lot of it for me, my family has had just an abundance of health-related expenses. That's been really hard to absorb that. And so I didn't want to give more time, but I did want to have more financial margin. And so that's where I looked at the opportunity cost, not just what's the opportunity cost if I do this, but also what's the opportunity cost if I don't do this? Like if I don't create more margin for the long haul, well, it's probably a recipe for burnout, for disillusionment, for frustration, for future stress. And so if I do want to experience more freedom and flourishing in those areas, what could I do to be able to steward my time strategically in a way where the short-term sacrifices, the burst of energy that I will give toward developing this, pays off long-term in the scalability for better sustainability, both personally and pastorally? And so being able to make that investment was absolutely worth it. And being able to really engage in a business model that I knew that the upfront investment led to more self-perpetuating momentum down the road by being able to develop evergreen content that once it's built, it's built. Once it's available, it's forever available. And that whole make money while you sleep mantra that we talked about, I remember for me in doing this, I had so many doubts, fears, objections, insecurities, questions on the front end. But I remember after doing it, I have this very distinct memory of waking up one morning, rolling over, grabbing my phone, and there was a notification. I literally made money when I slept. And I was like, I didn't touch my business really over the last month. I didn't really invest all that much. But that front end investment I made is still paying dividends today. And I'm really grateful for that. And so I think that the whole conversation about opportunity cost really matters.
Yeah.
Both positively and negatively. What's it going to cost me if I do it? But what's it going to cost me if I don't do it? And for me, that's kind of the long-term vision. I would love over the next decade if I could actually fully work myself off of church salary.
Yeah.
That's the long-term goal that I'm nowhere close to that, but I'm gradually working toward that with the goal of, I don't want to leave my role. I still want to be full-time as the lead pastor of our church. But if I could get to the freedom where I could reinvest my salary, give back what the church used to pay me to be able to invest in greater kingdom work, both in our church and throughout our region, I absolutely love the opportunity that financial freedom and bivocational, co-vocational endeavors could make possible for that.
Yeah. It's interesting because the Apostle Paul, there were times when his honesty and integrity were challenged. And in the New Testament writings, there are places where he goes, hey, I was hands off. I didn't ask anything of you guys. Right. And how could he go and plant a church and be as invested as he was in ministry and not ask anything of them? Well, because he had the side hustle. He was a tent maker. He knew that. And so you build into your life, the term you used is margin. And I think it's a really important word, because the opportunity cost that you talk about is really in that margin. You feel like now maybe as a pastor, you're working so hard, you've got no margin at all. Here's the way I like to think about it. Time and energy are two great assets that we're all trying to manage. And yes, there are time efficiency tools that we can use to get the most out of our time, but we can never regain time. We're all burning time at the same rate, and none of us can change that. But what we can change is the rate at which we burn and restore energy. You can't restore time, you can restore energy. So part of the margin that this allows us to do is to be able to restore that energy. So like you said, there's an upfront energy cost of getting this thing set up. But once you do, there are so many different opportunities now that never existed when I started out in pastoring, where you can earn. They call it passive income. It's not exactly passive. We all know there's work to do, but it is far less active and far less hands-on than pastoral ministry is. You can actually set something up that does have an automatic recurrence that you're not having to constantly recreate it again. For you, like you said, you wake up and hey, this thing's, I sold a package overnight or whatever. For me, behind me on my shelf here are the books that I've written. They're selling on Amazon, whether I'm awake or asleep. I can't live on that any more than you can live on your travel multiplier, but it gives us margin financially and energy-wise. So the opportunity cost up front is something worth expending. So let's move from that to the travel multiplier itself. So you got into this idea of, you use the term travel hacking. So let me just ask you about that term to begin with. What is travel hacking? What is the travel multiplier website? And then we'll get into the details.
Absolutely. So travel hacking is not a bad term. All of us have life hacks that we use. A hack is simply something that we engage to make ourselves more effective or efficient. Really, what I learned is that travel hacking was something that isn't new, isn't obscure. Actually, it's been around for decades. People have been doing this for quite a while. And so travel hacking is just simply adding on to your repertoire of life hacks, leadership hacks that you already use to become more effective and efficient with your time. So to define it, travel hacking is a strategic process of layering and leveraging credit card rewards for thousands of dollars in free travel. So like you mentioned earlier, there's no timeshare pitch, there's no pyramid scheme, there's no bait and switch gimmicks. It's simply taking the money that you already spend on everyday expenses each month for your family and making your money work for you in a way that generates all kinds of free travel. So then Travel Multiplier is the specific business that I created. So I created Travel Multiplier to help other people learn how to engage the freedom of free travel, just like I've done as well, through a number of free or paid resources.
So that raises two questions for me, one a little skeptical and one more affirmative. Let me start with the skeptical. So, what about our Dave Ramsey proponents out there that are never going to touch a credit card? Is there a way to do this without using a credit card? Because you specifically mentioned using the credit card to get these benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally get that. I, like many listeners, likely have benefited from Dave Ramsey, appreciate Dave Ramsey. There are people in our church that have benefited greatly from the Financial Peace University courses that we have offered over the years. I would say, in general, I would reject the all or nothing distinction that Dave Ramsey makes with credit cards. I think he has a wealth of wisdom for the dangers of credit cards. He also has a wealth of resources for really recovering after credit card debt. Yet at the same time, I would say that just because some people are undisciplined doesn't mean that all people are. Actually, I believe the stat is 51% of credit card users never carry a balance. So it's a
Right.
slight majority of people that use credit cards and use them responsibly. So financial literacy is something that I'm really passionate about based on the economic context in which I minister. And so a lot of what I've done, both in what I do personally and what I teach other people to do, is built on a wise and responsible, financially literate thing to say, hey, all of us have expenses and all of us have a choice. Anytime an expense occurs, are you going to pay cash? Are you going to write a check? Are you going to swipe a debit card? Or are you going to swipe a credit card? And the reality is, if you can use a credit card responsibly for your everyday expenses, well, those everyday expenses channeled through travel credit cards can actually make your money work for you. I'm sure we'll talk later on about some of the outcomes of this and some of the things that I've done or helped others do, but things like gas, groceries, your utility bills, subscriptions, all kinds of different things can really do a lot. And so I would say the key is you have to responsibly use your credit card. You have to exercise wisdom, discipline, restraint, just like you have to do in so many areas of life, and simply make the commitment that I'm going to pay off my statement balance on time and in full each and every month. So I've never paid interest or late fees. I've done all of this debt-free, as have the other people that I've worked with as well. It's not about spending more money. It's simply about taking the money you already spend and strategically leveraging that. Totally understand the Dave Ramsey
Sure.
people. Totally understand the skepticism. I was pretty skeptical myself. I would simply say my starting point of being so frustrated with the inability to travel, what I found is I thought it was too good to be true. I was highly skeptical, really cynical, but my desperation outweighed my skepticism, and I was willing to give it a shot. When I did, I found this is way better than I ever thought it would be. And I'm so glad that I jumped in and did this.
Yeah, that's a great segue to the second point. Before we do that, so let me just put a cap on that first one before we get to that second benefit of the benefit of travel, which is one, if you are currently in debt and you're working your way out of this, you probably haven't listened this far anyway because you're looking at it and going, I can't do stuff with my credit card. And not only do I honor that, but I really strongly suggest you work to get yourself out of debt and just that is your primary financial responsibility right now. We honor that and you need to do that. Or secondly, if you know that you're susceptible to that, every one of us has weaknesses. It's different ones for different people. And for some of it, it's spending. And if you've got an issue with spending and you know that credit card is going to be a temptation for you that is going to be hard to resist, then by all means, just do cash only. Again, we both honor that. You are not a less than good Christian or believer for having that particular area of challenge because each one of us has our different areas of challenge that we could talk about as well. For Tim and I, it just doesn't happen to be the credit card. Shelley and I have been married for 42 years now. We have never carried a balance on our credit card. We've used credit cards the entire time we've been married, and each of us before that. And we stay out of debt and we use the benefits of that. And now a short break to talk about something else. If you like the content you're hearing, here are two things you can do for us. First, forward this podcast to a friend. Second, consider becoming a financial supporter through Patreon, Venmo, or PayPal. Just go to carlvaders.com/support. For as little as $3 a month, you can help us put these resources into the hands of the ministries that need them the most. Our support link is in the show notes. But now Tim's going to help us to use the benefits of that even more. But we're going to do it specifically for travel. So that leads to the second question, which you already kind of touched on a little bit, the benefits of travel. Why travel? There are a lot of different things you can get benefits out of financially. Why is travel so important to you? And why do you think it's something that is important to so many pastors?
Yeah, I think ministry is a hard and heavy calling. And I think that for those of us who work and labor so hard for the sake of kingdom work, wherever God has called us, I believe that we also need to have an equal investment in rest and replenishment for the sake of longevity. I think that far too many in ministry carry too much for too long and end up paying the price on the back end of that. And I've been guilty of that myself, carrying more for longer than the Lord has asked me to. I do not naturally trend toward rest. Time off for me used to be really difficult. Even if I had the time away, my mind was still racing and still tethered to work. And so a lot of this for me, I talked about, grew out of my personal experience. We did a lot of the free and discounted pastoral housing options. And I'm really grateful. There were some very generous people that were able to gift our family some time away. And over time, I learned the value of that. I probably learned it the hard way by overworking and under-resting. But I also found that sometimes that can be a mixed bag of results. So I have this very distinct memory. Someone gifted us 10 days at a beach house in New Jersey. We went there, so excited, walked in the door and found the place was literally mold-filled, mosquito-infested.
Oh my.
It was disgusting. And it was at that point, that was my breaking point, where I wasn't primarily thinking about me. I was primarily thinking about my toddler age girls at the time who had just walked in that door. And I thought to myself, I have a limited window of time with my girls before they're grown and gone. What I don't want is I don't want them to grow up and say, hey, remember how dad always took us on crap vacations because our family was so invested in urban ministry, we could never do anything better. And so that sent me on this search for a solution. I had to search for quite a while before finding travel hacking. But what I found is once I found it, now on the other side of it, I'm realizing how much rest and replenishment that I was sacrificing and missing without even knowing it. I missed the opportunity of it, and I definitely discounted the value of it as well.
Yeah, we all know, especially as pastors, even when you are regulating your work hours, there's no fully stepping away because you're never not the pastor of that church, right? But physically getting away from the town you live in is one of the few ways that we can get some distance. And again, we carry our cell phones with us now. So back in the day when I first started in ministry, when you physically left the building, you were at home, but you were really disconnected because people had your office number. Most pastors also gave people their home number, but they knew the difference between calling the house and calling the church. And when they're calling your house, they knew they were interfering on your personal time, and they would often avoid doing that. But today, it's all on the cell phone. They don't know where you are. And so the announcement that I'm gone for the next two Sundays or whatever that is, we will be out of town, out of state, out of the country maybe. It doesn't really matter. That maybe helps others as well give you the sense of, okay, this is a time where we need to give the pastor space. Plus, we can set up systems whereby somebody else does take those calls. Somebody else does do those things so that we can step away. The physicality of leaving your community helps. Because even if you do, you know, the staycation, yeah, okay, it's got some benefits. And if that's all you can do, then get the best out of it. But the staycation, you just know it's going to end up being the to-do list at the house rather than really relaxing and really enjoying it. So the physicality of getting away is really, really helpful. So I don't think we need to really sell that to people because I've multiple times seen, you know, when people do, what do you want to do when you retire or what do you like to do more of? Travel takes top of the list every time. Constantly, it's a huge desire for people to do more travel. So we don't need to sell travel anymore. We've got that laid down. So start us on some of the real practical things. If we're just looking at this and we're trying to understand what it is you're talking about, give us an idea of what it is you are talking about and how do we begin on this idea of travel hacking? What does it begin to look like in the first stages?
Absolutely. So there's really three key steps that anybody who wants to engage travel hacking needs to follow. Step one is simply determine your travel goals. What type of trip would you be most replenished by? What would you enjoy? What would your family absolutely love or adore as a memorable family moment? And I will say, for those of us in ministry especially, when you're so used to cutting corners so that you can cut cost in order to travel, sometimes it can be hard to dream big. But I would encourage you, dream big. Where would you go if money wasn't an obstacle? Flights, hotels, resorts, house rentals, cruises, theme parks, all of that's on the table. There is no one-size-fits-all way to travel hack. Really, it's a strategic process that you can be able to engage whatever form of travel you best enjoy. Then comes step two, signing up strategically for the right credit cards that align with your travel goals. So if you like to fly, airline cards can be great. If you're terrified of flying, you probably want to avoid airline credit cards. So whatever it is that you enjoy, here's the first and best card I recommend every person start with. It's the Chase Sapphire Preferred Card. So that card earns you 75,000 bonus points, which you can use for travel if you spend $5,000 in your first 3 months. So just think your everyday expenses. Do I spend at least $1,700 a month as a family? Here's a tip that can actually double those points right out of the gate. If you sign up for the card, but don't add your spouse as the authorized user, you can then refer them to get the exact same card. They can earn the bonus as well, and you get a 15,000 point referral bonus, which means you're starting your travel hacking journey with approximately 175,000 points. Now you might say, what is that worth? Well, it's worth $1,750 in cash back, which is what many people are familiar with their credit cards, but that's actually worth over $3,000 in free travel. So you might ask, well, what could I do with that amount of points? That's where step three comes in, maximizing those rewards for free travel. So what most people miss is when you cash out your points for cash back, you get a penny per point in value. When you use those same points for travel, you're getting 2 to 5 cents per point in value. I'll give you two examples of trips that I took last year. Okay. My wife and I went to an all-inclusive resort in Cancun, Mexico. It cost $1,500 per night for those that paid in cash to be there. And we flew from the Northeast to Cancun direct flights. That trip would have cost about $6,000 if we'd paid out of pocket for it. We got that trip for 175,000 Chase points. So just by signing up for one card strategically, you could have that same type of luxurious all-inclusive experience. Another example, at the highest end of what we've been able to do, my wife and I celebrated our 10th wedding anniversary last year. And in order to celebrate our 10th anniversary, we went to Europe for 2 weeks. So we got to visit 6 different European countries, loved it. But even the flights to get there, we flew to and from Europe in lay flat business class seats. So your seat folds down into a bed. You get catered food as you sit in your own cubicle, which is pretty amazing for long transatlantic flights. Those flights cost $4,000 a piece. Mm-hmm. We didn't pay $4,000 like everybody sitting around us though. We got $4,000 flights for 55,000 points each. So many people would take 55,000 points and cash it out for $550 cash back. But when you learn how to maximize those rewards for free travel, you could take those 55,000 points and turn them into something like a $4,000 flight to be able to do a transatlantic flight to a place like Europe in lay flat business class seats. So that's just a quick rundown of step one, determine your travel goals. Step two, sign up strategically for the right card. Start with that Chase Sapphire Preferred card. And then step three, learn how to maximize those rewards for free travel, because that's really what makes or breaks extravagant trips for most people. Most people don't know how to be able to find and engage and leverage their points for that type of extravagant free travel.
Okay. I'm going to start with the cynic's question. How much is Chase Sapphire Preferred Card paying you for that ad?
They're not. So I don't get anything off of any of you that go and sign up for that card. But what I found, like when I started, there's over 90 different travel rewards credit cards on the market. Right. And each of them employ full-time marketing departments whose job it is to convince you that their card is best and most valuable. A number of them do really great marketing and have really poor results. some of them, like the Chase Sapphire Preferred Card, give you some of the best value on the market. And that's really what I try to do. I try to take the expertise and mastery that I've now been able to achieve with travel hacking. I earned 1.2 million points in my first 9 months, and I've now earned over 5 million travel rewards points since then, simply using credit cards on my everyday expenses. And so I try to help other people not waste time, not waste money, not waste opportunities, but to be able to maximize that and unlock the secrets of free travel, just like we have.
Okay, I'm going to get very practical and very selfish. I have one place left on my bucket list. There's a lot of places I haven't traveled to. There's only one that I'm determined I'm going to visit, this one place before I go. After that, if I get to visit other places, I'll be happy. But this is the one that I absolutely have to visit that I've never visited. I've never been to Israel. People are often surprised by that. As a pastor, for as long as I've been, I've never been to Israel. So I've got a card. It's not the Chase Sapphire Preferred Card. It's the United Club Card. It's a good travel card. I've got a lot of miles on it. What would I do? Because I think if you walk me through this, one, it'll help me. Two, I think it puts some real practical steps. It takes it out of the generic and makes it more specific. And often people can then see how that can maybe work for them. What would you recommend that I do as, what would be my steps to get to Israel for free on what I've got now? What would that path look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So I will say, first off, you could supercharge your United points with the Chase Sapphire Preferred Card, because those Chase points do transfer to United amongst many other airlines. So you could add an extra 175,000 miles to that, which you could do. There are also some really great tools that you can use that what they do, it's like Google Flights for points. These flights aren't like random, obscure. You don't have to get lucky or book them 12 months to the day in advance. You just have to search what's out there. So one of them, a really good one that you could use for free, is called seats.aero, A-E-R-O. You could search on there and say, hey, I want to go to whatever your airport is. Let's say you want to fly out of LA or San Francisco or somewhere else. Hey, I want to fly from here to Tel Aviv. Search and see what flights are out there with United. The other really good tool is called point.me. And so again, this is as simple as doing a Google Flight search. You don't have to spend hours and hours searching. There are tools that can find it for you. So point.me, the other thing it will do is it will find ways you could book that same flight through another airline. I'll give an example. When I went to Europe, that flight I was on was an American Airlines flight that I booked with 55,000 Alaska Airlines miles. Because what most people don't know is you can book through all kinds of different things. So with United, United works with, say, Air Canada. And so you might actually be able to hop on an Air Canada flight using United points. I did that coming back from Europe, which is really great. And so those two tools, seats.aero and point.me, are ways that if you're already sitting on a wealth of points, like what you're saying, Carl, you could simply search on there, see what's available. You can search economy, you can search business class, you can do all of those types of things really easily. That's one way you can do it. And then for you and Shelly, if you got the Chase Sapphire Preferred Cards, well, that would put a whole lot more miles in your pocket as well to be able to enjoy some of those business class flights to and from Europe. Or if you said, hey, we have it covered with our existing United miles, those Chase Sapphire points could cover like luxury lodging in Tel Aviv or in Bethlehem or in Jerusalem or all kinds of different places. You could use those Chase points to be able to take care of your lodging and get that for free, since you already have some airline miles accumulated.
Okay. Everything you're saying makes sense. But as someone who's not done this, a lot of that sounded confusing, complicated. I'm going to have to go through and listen to it three or four times, which I'm willing to do. But I know that more than just simply, hey, I've got some of these ideas, you've created the Travel Multiplier website, and you've got multiple entry points and basically different amounts of help that you offer depending on, one, what a person is interested, two, what they can potentially afford, three, how much work they want to do. So if somebody wants to use your expertise a little more directly and say, hey, Tim, can you take care of this for me? What are some ways that you can actually help walk people through this? At what levels?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find everything on my website, travelmultiplier.com. I've got stuff on social media. I've got a YouTube channel where I share all kinds of free tips if you want to follow along with that. I have that. If you go on my website, you'll find some free content. For instance, maybe you're a skeptic. There's a free guide you can download called The Skeptic's Guide to Travel Hacking, where I walk through seven of the most prevalent myths and objections that most people believe about travel hacking. Or if you say, I'm kind of where you were, Tim, I'm more desperate than I am resistant. There's two things that I offer, paid services. I have an on-demand course called Becoming a Travel Hacker. It's about 3 hours of on-demand content broken down into 5 to 15 minute lessons that walks you step by step from start to finish. You can do it as quickly or as slowly as you would like. There's all kinds of bonus materials that you receive in that that make the process as quick, easy, as simple as possible for those that want to learn this for themselves. Others, like what you just described, Carl, might say, hey, I want the destination, but I don't really care about the journey. I don't care to learn the system. I'm too busy. I got too much going on. So I created travel hacking coaching. I call that my just tell me what to do option for those that say, hey, appreciate the course. I want to go to Israel, or I want to go to Europe with my wife for an anniversary, or I want to take my kids to Disney, or I want to go explore the Grand Canyon, rent a house while we're there. Those types of things for travel hacking coaching. You don't have to learn anything. I take all of my expertise and mastery. We talk through your travel goals and all of those different details. I collect all the core information on the front end. And then each step of the way, I just say, go here, do this, take this next step. Here's your options. Where do you want to go? How do you make this happen? And it is really quick, easy, and seamless for people that are in that place.
Terrific. So yeah, depending on whatever your level is, your level of interest, your level of expertise, your level of desire, Tim's got all kinds of different things. So Travel Multiplier, his website, we will put links to all of these things that he mentioned in the show notes, seats.arrowpoint.me, and especially his Travel Multiplier website. One of the things about this that's really nice is, as we started this conversation about, it is so easy to be cynical and skeptical, and you should be skeptical about people who say they're going to do these things for you, which is why when I know someone like Tim who can help those of us who are in very similar positions, we've barely got enough to get by, maybe even not quite enough to get by. We'd love to go to travel, but how do we do that? Tim's ideas work. They are from someone that you can trust, and there are multiple levels that you can join it at and learn as you go along. So there are all kinds of options here that I really encourage you to take advantage of. Before we get to the lightning round, anything else that you would want to talk to pastors about who may still be listening to that and go, I just don't know. What is there any other piece of advice or any piece of encouragement that you can give to the discouraged pastor who really is wanting to travel, but is still thinking this just got to be too good to be true?
Yeah, I probably would take it back to what we talked about on the front end of the conversation related to the opportunity cost. When you're in a place where you're really gassed, you're tired, you're discouraged, you're depressed, you're just worn out, that's an indication of how much you need really refreshing time away. Not just something that's good enough. That's actually a pretty helpful like alarm bell that you're experiencing internally to say, you don't just need any old vacation. You need something that is nice enough and quality enough to be replenishing for what you need to really be poured back into. And so I believe that there's an opportunity cost for doing this, a small investment of time, or there's an opportunity cost to not doing it as well. So I think that's probably my greatest joy, in that probably 70% of the people that I work with are pastors and missionaries. I've been able to lessen missionaries' fundraising needs because they don't need to fundraise for travel anymore. I've been able to help pastors be able to get really incredible vacations. I've been able to help them go on mission trips and cut the travel cost out of it. All kinds of different things. I get a lot of joy out of seeing, especially those who are on the front lines of kingdom work, be able to do things like go to an all-inclusive golf resort in Cancun, take their wife to Hawaii during a sabbatical, go to Washington, D.C. as a family of seven, maybe even be able to, for the first time in a long time, travel across the country for a holiday. All kinds of different things like that. I get a lot of joy out of that. And so if you're in that place and you say, hey, I don't know, I'm hesitant, I would tell you, I was in that exact same spot. I found it to be worth it. And I would love to help you experience the same type of joy that comes from, I can't believe we got this nice of a vacation. I can't believe it didn't cost us any money. Can't believe that we don't have to stress out about vacations on an annual basis anymore. If that's something that you would say, I really want and need that, I would love to help you in whatever way that I can. Or if you'd like to interact personally, maybe you got a few more hangups and want to jump on a call and have a conversation. I'll have Carl drop my email address in the show notes. Drop me an email. Let's hop on the phone and have a conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll do that. We'll give you everything that you can to point to Tim, including an email address that you can directly get a hold of him. Once again, I know Tim. I trust him. I've been where he is. I've physically been in the church that he's pastoring, seen the work that he's done to know that we can vouch for him. I would never do something like this if it wasn't that I trusted somebody. And neither one of us does this because some company is paying us to do this. We simply want to make this opportunity available to pastors who are in similar situations to where we are and where we've been. We know the needs and we've got some ways to help you get to these places. So we want to do all that we can to help you. So, Tim, thank you so much for all of that, for maybe just opening up a little door of hope for some pastors who thought they never could have the opportunity to travel. Maybe they can now begin to explore that and find some of those opportunities for themselves and their families. That'd be great. Now, let's jump to the lightning round. You've already answered these questions once, so you're going to have to come up with number two answers for all of these four questions. All right.
Yep.
First of all, what are the biggest changes you've seen in your field of ministry in the last few years, and how have you adapted to them?
Yeah, I would say probably the biggest change I've seen is that the fabric of community and relationships in our culture has changed drastically post-COVID. On the other side of remote work and quarantine and isolation and so many things, people have now become accustomed, some of whom never leaving their house 5, 6, even 7 days in a week. They don't go to the movies, they stream. They don't grocery shop, they get it delivered. They don't go out to eat, they order takeout. They don't go to an office, they have a desk in their bedroom or their basement. And so, learning how to engage people relationally and bring people out of isolation and into community has been a really big challenge. But I think even naming that for people, being able to be very personal and conversational, compassionate, to not be frustrated. And I can't believe that you're so disconnected from church or ministry or community, but to go, hey, on the other side of isolation, there's an opportunity to flourish in your relationship with Christ, following Jesus together. I would love to help you overcome whatever mental health battles, whatever relational trauma that's keeping you isolated right now, and be able to shepherd people out of isolation and into community.
Yeah. That isolation makes people harder to reach. You're not just running into them like you used to, but it also amplifies in their lives the need for connection, which is the thing that the church is so good at, connecting us to God, connecting us to each other. That's what we're in the business of doing. I think now their felt need for that for a whole lot of people is higher than it's ever been, even if the challenge of reaching them is more difficult. Yeah. Question number two, what free resource like an app or a website has helped you lately that you'd recommend for small church ministry? I would start with Travel Multiplier.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, we start with Travel Multiplier. And then on top of that, I know that this is a hotly debated topic in today's world. I have found ChatGPT to be immensely helpful and effective, not as a primary resource, but I treat it, being in a smaller church context without administrative help, I treat ChatGPT like a virtual assistant, and being able to engage that has saved me so much time on more task-driven things so that I can invest so much more energy in people and writing sermons and studying and learning and developing and so many other things. I'm a big fan of ChatGPT.
Yeah, we've had a couple conversations on this podcast with guests about AI and specifically ChatGPT and some of the other AI sites. All right, number three, what's the best piece of ministry advice you've ever received?
Yeah, it's actually related to this whole conversation. Your ministry will rarely be healthier than you are. So that has caused me to press into counseling, understand emotional health, to be able to pursue deeper mentoring, others who are investing in my marriage, my parenting, my wife and my kids, and so many different things. That's a key principle that really informs why I'm so passionate about traveling myself and helping others do the same, because someone told me that a decade ago, and it took about 5 years before it actually set in. But that understanding that your church will rarely be healthier than you are has been life-changing for me and life-giving to my family and our church family here.
Yeah, I experienced this recently. I've been at my current church for 32 years now, coming up on 33, and I, was a lead pastor for 25 years, and my youth pastor is now my pastor and has been doing a great job for the last 8 years. But a friend of mine visited our church not long ago, and at the end of the service, as we were having lunch, he said, "I walked into that church and it felt like you." And I went on two levels. One was delight, and the other part was panic. Like, even after not being the pastor for 8 years, he said, "That church felt like you." Now, he meant it as a compliment, for which I'm grateful. But yeah, to a whole lot, your health will be reflected in the manner of the church. And the longer you're there, the more evident and obvious it will be. So stay healthy. The pastor's health is probably the strongest indicator of the health or ill health of a congregation. Yeah, great point. And then number four, what's the funniest or weirdest thing you've ever seen in church?
Yeah, so I actually shared this back on episode 86, and nothing has topped it since we last talked. So
okay,
it was Easter Sunday, a lot of people in the room, we're doing baptisms, had somebody get in the pool and refuse to go under the water.
Mm-hmm.
Her baptism story finished playing, and she just blurted out, "I'm not going under this water. This is freezing. I'm going to kill you." And actually put her hands around my neck, like jokingly, like trying. And so I'm like awkwardly trying to play along. I went back and forth a couple times with some funny interactions that everybody in the room is laughing at. And so finally I said, "Hey, you don't want to go under this water, right?" "No, I don't want to go under this water either, but I'm going to make you a deal. I'm going to hold your hand. I'm going to count to three. And at the count of three, we're both going under this water. Got it?" And so she was like, "Okay." So I counted to three, held her hand. I went under, I came back up. All she had done was dipped her face in, and everybody clapped and cheered. And we were so grateful that she sort of went through it. And so we said, "That's one of those good enough. I'm a Baptist. I believe in baptism by immersion," but her face going into the water was all the immersion we were getting out of her that day.
Wow. Let's hope baptism doesn't work like Achilles heel, that the back of her head isn't saved.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, there is something about this whole idea of getting soaked in front of a whole group of people during a formal church setting that is just open for all kinds of interesting, funny, and challenging stories. I think baptism stories have probably been the most frequently told story in the answer to this question, the funny, weird stuff that happens around baptism. Tim, thank you so much for this. As you mentioned already, we're going to put your email in the show notes. We're going to put those other places that you mentioned, ChatGPT, seats.arrowpoint.me, the travel multiplier. All of that is in the show notes for anybody who wants to reach out further to Tim on any of this. But Tim, thank you for the work you do. Thank you, first of all, for the work you do in your local community in Wilkes-Barre, in a place that really needs the light of the gospel shining, and the work that you're doing there is extraordinary. I've seen it firsthand and I'm blessed by it. Thank you for your friendship. And thank you for your advice today. You're going to help a lot of pastors get a little more margin in their life and ministry.
Thanks so much, Carl.
For so many years of pastoral ministry, we traveled very seldom. And when we did, it was usually to stay with family, which actually was great. But now that we're doing the ministry of helping small churches thrive, which takes us all over the world in ministry, we are gaining a renewed appreciation for the value of travel, from seeing how others live, to taking in the history that we've only read about, to the chance to slow down away from the responsibilities of home. I'm convinced now more than ever that travel is of value in so many ways, especially for those of us who serve the Lord in pastoral ministry. This is why I had Tim on as my guest for this episode. As you heard both of us say several times in our conversation, no one is sponsoring us for this. There are no pyramid schemes involved, and I won't be getting one penny if you sign up for any of the services that Tim offers. We really just want to help you, your spouse, your family, and your church by giving pastors any tools that we can to create more margin for you to enjoy your life, to do valid ministry, and to extend both of those in long-term, healthy ways. This episode was produced by Veronica Beaver. It was edited by Phil Vaders. Original theme music was written and performed by Jack Wilkins of jackwilkinsmusic.com. The graphic design is by Solomon Joy. And me, I'm Carl Vaders, and I hope to talk with you again in the church lobby.